Welcome to the Intelligence Agency in Focus, sponsored by Leidos.
For the intelligence community, intelligence comes in many forms. An emerging source is artificial intelligence applied to a variety of functions. For one view of how and where AI is coming in, we turn to the Chief Technology Advisor in the Office of the Director of National Intelligence, Dean Salalas, who joins me in studio. Mr. Salalas, good to have you in.
Oh, thank you so much.
First of all, give us the landscape or the architecture, if you will, or the framework. I'm using all the federal words here, of how AI is fitting into the mission and function of the intelligence community.
Sure. You have to start with kind of the premise under which we are operating. Why do we need this, and what is the mission imperative here? And to do that, I want to kind of abstract away from the intelligence community, just talk about the world, right? So the world is producing data at a volume and pace unprecedented in history. It's all digital data. Cisco Corporation has estimated that global internet protocol traffic will soon exceed 3.3 zettabytes per year. If you want to,
it's a lot of zeros.
That's a lot of zeros. I did a back of the envelope calculation. It's about 25 million years of high definition video crossing the wires every single month.
I think it's 1,000 exabytes, right?
Yeah, it's huge. It's huge. It's an enormous number. The recently departed director of NGA, the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency, estimated that if we don't change course and speed about the way we do imagery analysis by 2037, we would need 8 million imagery analysts to process the imagery that we have today. Okay? And this repeats itself across the intelligence community, across what we do. And our job, right, is to see over the horizon in enough time to impact the outcome. And that means we have to understand the data that the world produces at a pace that is unprecedented in history. The hypothesis is that inside the data that the world creates are the answers to our intelligence questions. Who are the bad actors of the world? Where are the things that are likely to do us harm, right? So we start with that as the premise, and we recognize that the background of this is that the world is of technology is advancing at a rapid pace, and we've got to do a better job in government of adopting the technology of the world. So that's the premise for what we're doing, and that's what creates the strategy that we call augmenting intelligence using machines, which is about how do we take the best technology of the world and apply it to our hardest intelligence problems.
And of course, in some sense, data analysis has always been the concern of what they used to call MIS, management information systems. It was just relational database queries, but it was in some ways a line to AI, if you look back that far. So is there a step function at some point at which artificial intelligence, as we're using the term nowadays, is different from earlier forms of analysis or processing on data sets?
Right. So much of computing is about processing data, but this is different in that this is about taking the data of the world and producing computer software algorithms that are predictive, that can actually make a prediction or make a come to a conclusion about new data from old data. So the basic idea of machine learning is you take a set of data, like a bunch of images of cats, you pass it to an algorithm, like we call it a model. That model gets trained to learn how to recognize images of cats. And then you pass it new images and it can identify cats. That's new. That is something that did not exist prior to 2012, right? And much of what has happened in artificial intelligence in our private lives, the stuff you use on your phones every day, the predictive analysis you get when you're reading the news, the route planning that the mapping software does for you, all of that stems from that kind of technology.
Sure. And getting to the intelligence community, you've got a portfolio of initiatives that are not classified. Tell us what's in the portfolio, and that is to say where you see this AI and machine learning helping.
Yeah. So we believe that this modern computational technology, the advanced capabilities of artificial intelligence and machine learning apply to virtually every aspect of the intelligence mission. And the intelligence mission is not as obscure as many people might think it is, right? We're focused on the things of the world that can do us harm. So we have an area we call identity intelligence. That's simply who are the bad actors of the world that want to do us harm, whether they're terrorists or transnational organized criminals, right? So knowing who they are, how they're connected, how their networks work together. And if you think about it, you can imagine how using AI and machine learning applied to that problem would make it easier to identify the bad actors of the world. Cybersecurity is a huge one. The cyber ecosystem has grown so rapidly. The amount of data involved in cyber is so great that treating the cyber world as a system of systems itself is a new approach to cyber. It's not just looking at malware. It's not just building defensive networks and firewalls. It's how at the speed of the internet can we detect cyber intrusion and defeat it?
Right? And defeat it, I think, is the key word
and
there.
And defeat it,
to
absolutely.
Make an operational construct instead of something, oh, I found this, what should I do about it?
Absolutely. Being able to react at the speed of cyber attack is really, really critical. Another big area that we're interested in is countering foreign influence operations. And I'm not just talking about election security. I'm talking about how do we know that the data that is produced on the internet and anywhere in the world is authentic, right? So you've probably read about deep fakes. So you can use AI, they call it generative artificial neural networks, GANs, to produce fake images, fake videos, fake text, fake anything. And it gets increasingly difficult for humans to detect and differentiate between truth and falsehood. And if you just extrapolate a little bit, you can see that that's a big problem for the intelligence community because we really need to know what's real and what's not as we're doing analysis and as we reach conclusions. So authenticity of information, countering foreign influence. So you can see we have a wide range of problems, virtually all of which could benefit from the application of these technologies.
And it seems like there are some other allied technological areas that need to advance maybe. For example, we just talked about facial recognition and image recognition. And that's still an area of a lot of ferment going on because we can easily recognize faces that are single and well lit. But when it comes to looking at them at a great distance, when there's atmospheric effects and optical effects, or picking one out of many, those are still pretty tough problems that would eventually coincide with the AI question.
That's exactly right. One of the things that we know about AI is while it can do amazing things, it can do things at with superhuman capability, the things that it can do are very narrow. And it's a very new technology and it is brittle. It is breakable. It can be fooled. There are very public demonstrations where you can get a little patch and put it around your neck like a badge. And the computer vision, instead of seeing you as a human, will see you as a teddy bear. Or turtles as rifles. There's a whole bunch of examples out there on the internet you can look at. And the point is, these are very new technologies, and we need to be focused on AI assurance, AI reliability, understanding bias, understanding where these models work and where they don't work. That's a big chunk of what the IC's AI strategy is about, because as we want to use these for national security purposes, it's really important that we understand where they work and where they don't.
Dean Salalies is the Chief Technology Advisor in the Office of the Director of National Intelligence. In Part 2, Salalies discusses some of the technical underpinnings needed for an effective AI program. I'm Tom Temin.
From idea to battlefield, innovation is at the heart of mission success. At Leidos, we're helping customers accelerate readiness, resilience, and strategic modernization. Leidos is number one on the Washington Technology Top 100, bringing unrivaled talent to bear through our software factories and providing proven autonomy capabilities, agile and SecDevOps, and advanced AI/ML that allows you to see the full picture faster. At Leidos, we're developing practical answers for a complicated world. Visit leidos.com/defense to learn how.
In part two of my interview with Dean Salalies, Chief Technology Advisor in the Office of the Director of National Intelligence, Salalies detailed the technical infrastructure needed for an effective AI program. But first, I asked him about the low barriers to acquisition and use of AI. And because it's like so many information technologies, it's easily distributed, easily acquired, and it's almost democratic in the way it can spread around the world. With respect to our adversaries, then there is almost a spy versus spy, I guess, culture or activity coming into artificial intelligence where you have algorithms battling each other, causing each other to learn back and forth.
That's certainly an emerging risk. You use the word democratization, which is the right way to look at it. This is, again, unlike any prior era of technology where the technology is very democratized. And unlike previous eras where the U.S. government was the primary or perhaps the only investor, say, take the early nuclear era in the 1940s, right? We are not. The U.S. government is not the major investor. We're not the primary investor. U.S. private sector investment, worldwide private sector investment probably exceeds $50 billion. No individual government's investment annually is close to that. Not ours, not China's, not anybody's. So the majority of the work is happening out in the private sector. It's in the colleges and universities and the global internet economy. And the technology generally is available to our adversaries at the same time it is available to us, right?
And a lot of the investment by the private sector is for its own very practical, very narrow problems, whereas it's hard to get investment other than from the government through grants or whatever, or with contractors under contracts for those specific government problems because there's no real economic incentive otherwise.
Right. So what you've hit on is kind of the second big thrust of the IC's AI strategy. The first one is we got to be better adopters of commercial technology. We got to be fast followers, which means we've got to fix our acquisition systems. We've got to bring better we got to find better ways to bring expertise into the community. We got to find better ways to work with the technologies, both large and small, because a lot of the emerging capabilities are coming out of very, very small companies that aren't well suited for dealing with federal contracts, right? So we got to work on that. But in addition to that, the private sector isn't doing everything, right? So like virtually any era, the private sector is out to generate profits. And those profits come from eyeballs, clicks, ads, big middle of the bell curve where money is, right? Well, intelligence problems are not those. Intelligence problems are at that narrow edge of the bell curve where low risk, high probability, high cost things happen. Low probability, high cost things happen there, right? And that is a challenge, right, that the private sector doesn't invest in well. So we have problems like assurance. Again, if I go back to the cats example, you know, our private sector partners may not care too much if you misclassify a cat. We care a lot if we misclassify a weapon that might do us harm from space and we take action on that, right?
Dean Salalas is the Chief Technology Advisor in the Office of the Director of National Intelligence. I'm Tom Temin.
From idea to battlefield, innovation is at the heart of mission success. At Leidos, we're helping customers accelerate readiness, resilience, and strategic modernization. Leidos is number one on the Washington Technology Top 100, bringing unrivaled talent to bear through our software factories and providing proven autonomy capabilities, agile and SecDevOps, and advanced AI/ML that allows you to see the full picture faster. At Leidos, we're developing practical answers for a complicated world. Visit leidos.com/defense to learn how.
Dean Salalas is the Chief Technology Advisor in the Office of the Director of National Intelligence. Let's talk about some of the practical aspects of AI. First of all, what are the technical foundations, the infrastructure for in IT that an agency or something like the IC needs to be able to, as you mentioned, the data sets are very large. The algorithms can consume a lot of computing cycles. So what do you need to do to be ready to use AI?
You cannot build a house without a solid foundation. The foundation of AI is data and computational technology. The intelligence community has spent much of the last decade on a program we call ISITE, the Information Technology Enterprise of the IC, and that's been about modernizing the technology infrastructure, and that is about getting cloud technology throughout the community, making basic computational capability available to our technologists just as it is in the private sector. But that's not good enough, right? Because the new era of computation requires sophisticated kinds of computing. We talk about GPUs, graphical processing units, or tensor processing units, TPUs, or neuromorphic chips, or field programmable gate arrays, or any of the wide variety of things that are the specialized computation that enable AI computation, and we need to make the investments in those things. Second, we need to make an investment in data, and not the way most people think. It's not about acquiring more and more data. It's acquiring the right data and having it properly prepared for machine learning. So the reason you can do image classification is that Stanford and Princeton and others created a database called ImageNet. It's got 14 million images in it, classified by people into 200,000 categories of things. That's training data, curated training data. Well, most intelligence data is not that. It is lots and lots of raw data, and there's a lot of effort to to turn raw data into training data so it's useful for machine learning. So data
such
and
as
technology.
Say drone imagery, which might be hours of nothing that is useful, punctuated by a minute here and there or a second here and there or an image here and there that is important.
Exactly. But the point is just having lots of drone imagery isn't useful by itself. It has to be lots of drone imagery that somebody has watched and classified. We call it tagging the data, right? So what you want to do is you want to tag all of the drone imagery that you have to say this part's interesting and that part's not interesting. This part has people in it. This part has vehicles approaching a checkpoint. This part doesn't. That becomes training data. But raw video by itself is not training data. Raw video is the thing you want to use after you've trained your algorithm, right? Mm-hmm. So that's a big chunk of what we have to do is develop that training data.
It sounds like almost an artificial intelligence application in training the data, because as you say, how many people do you have to look through hours and hours and hours of drone footage?
It's even worse. How many images do you think Google has of cats? Lots and lots and lots, right? How many images do you think we have of, you know, missile launchers from space, right, that are high quality? Certainly not tens of millions, right? And that is the challenge. If you don't have enough data to train your algorithm, they call that low-shot learning in AI, which means you don't have what would be sufficient data to train an algorithm. You need ways to do that. So that's areas we're investing in, low-shot learning or one-shot learning or zero-shot learning where we have no data, which means when we might have to create synthetic data to train an algorithm. Those are all rich areas for exploration.
Now, we've talked about the technical foundations. What about the human capital foundations? We've all driven by Fort Meade. We've driven by the CIA and see cars pouring in and out of there. My sense is a lot of really smart people coming in and out of those places every day. I can't go in. But what about the human capital and the intellectual and training backgrounds needed for this specific type of work?
It's another key part of our AIM strategy, which is that we need to upskill the IC workforce in general. So the technology workforce in the IC is unmatched. They're fantastic. We have some of the smartest and brightest people in the world that are working on these things. But, you know, I've been at this about 40 years, and the last 5 years has been the most rapid change in technology that I've ever seen. And so it's hard for even experts to keep up. And it's hard for somebody, you know, who's focused on, say, being last generation's database programmer to transition their new skills to these new technologies. We're now talking about probabilistic programming, which is a whole new variety of programming that, you know, so we do need to retrain our technical people and get them skills. That's actually the easiest part. The next part is we have to train the rest of the workforce to understand what AI can do and, more importantly, what it can't do, right? So AI, as it exists today, is narrow. It can do very specific small things. What it can't do is anything people think it can do. It can't replace human cognition in any significant way. It doesn't have judgment. It doesn't think. As I said before, it's easily foolable. I like to say that the most trivial biological intelligence runs rings around the most sophisticated artificial intelligence today. So we have a lot of work to do. We also have to educate our leadership, right? They have to understand where we can use it and when we can't use it. I think a lot of the marketing out there, the hype, leads you to believe, well, we'll just throw a little AI on this problem and it'll solve the problem. And, you know, we've got to get away from that and get back to, no, it's useful for very specific things and we need to know how to apply it and where to apply it.
And this strikes me as an effort that really has no end point, that this is a way of life basically now. And over time, there will be lots of algorithms running lots of places and people will continue to discover new places to apply them. And that there's really no end game to say we are now in AI.
Yeah, and each AI implementation, if it's done right, is a continuous learning system. So this provides additional challenges to us, right? When we accredit software, we tend to accredit it to do a thing. And we take known inputs and produce known outputs. Machine learning systems don't work that way. They learn over time. The outputs change based on the inputs. And if they're built correctly, they're going to evolve and grow over time just the way other kinds of learning systems grow. So it provides all kinds of new challenges. And I think this idea that we're on a continuum here is exactly right. We don't call our strategy the AI strategy. We call it the augmenting intelligence using machine strategy because the narrow techniques of AI are what we're using today, and I don't know what we're going to be using tomorrow.
And I imagine over time, a algorithm that is learning and producing different outputs and growing and getting more capable, that could also produce really big variations in what is correct for the use that might have started out early as a very tiny wrinkle. But as it grows and processes more and learns more, the biases or the off mark results would be something that people have to keep monitoring as an algorithm lives and grows and ages.
Any AI or classifier system is only as good as the data it's trained with, and that data inherently has bias. Somebody has selected what data to train it with. Somebody has done the tagging and marking of the data. Somebody's made all kinds of decisions. Bias by itself is not an evil word, though. We bias the data because we want it to produce a result in an area that is relatively narrow. Bias, what most people mean by bias is that we're going to use AI to impact some protected class, either gender or race. And that kind of bias needs to be rooted out of the data we use to train AI machine learning. For intelligence purposes, I'm interested in bias because I want to know how the data is biased so that I know where I can use it and, more importantly, where I can't use it. So your full motion video example. If I train my full motion video to look at checkpoints over the desert, I should not expect that it will work in checkpoints over the jungle. They're different areas. The bias is towards the desert, right? So that kind of bias, we just need to understand so that we use it for appropriate purposes. I like to think of it as on-label and off-label use. Don't use AI for off-label use. If you don't understand what it's intended to do, don't use it for that thing.
And a final question then, that implies you need a governance and oversight sort of function built into the community to make sure that the off-label uses don't creep in.
Because of the nature of AI, because it's a growing and emerging technology space, because it has risk, because it is foolable, we actually need new ways to think about how we govern the application of these algorithms. We need new ways. You know, in government, we often talk about ANA, accreditation and authorization. And those rules are for the traditional way of doing software engineering. They're not for these probabilistic, undeterministic machine learning algorithms. And so we're investing in new ways of doing accrediting and authorizing our systems, new ways of evaluating when they work. We really have to get to a point of continuous evaluation and accreditation of these systems because they learn and they change. And we can't use the current processes, which can take months or years to accredit a software system, in a technology world that's changing, you know, every 30 days or every 45 days.
Dean Salalis is Chief Technology Officer in the Office of the Director of National Intelligence. There's much more to the interview. Find it in its entirety at federalnewsnetwork.com. Search Federal Insights. I'm Tom Temin.
Thank you for listening to the Intelligence Agency in Focus, sponsored by Leidos on Federal News Radio, part of the Federal News Network.
I'm getting older. Do I need to worry about falling?
Yes, you do. Every year, 1 in 4 people 65 and older will experience a fall, and many result in serious injury. The majority of falls happen at home, so take a look around. Replace bulbs and add lighting to help you see obstacles. Remove things that can make you trip. Fix uneven steps and floors, and install handrails in bathrooms and on stairs. Consider balance or strength training exercises, which can help with agility. Get your eyes and hearing checked regularly. Changes in your hearing can affect your balance. To learn more, please talk to your doctor about steps you can take to help prevent a fall. You can also visit aarpfoundation.org or medicaremadeclear.com/falls. This message was brought to you by UnitedHealthcare and AARP Foundation.